some football!
Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
Here comes Beckett. Down goes Shaw. The ball is out. Arkansas's got it at the 1 foot line.
Blue!
Yes, sir.
Do you trust that I do not want to see you die here tonight?
Sir, yes, sir.
Blue, you're my boy!
You can actually feel Razorback Stadium shaking underneath our feet right now.
I don't want them to gain another yard.
Here's the God in football.
Can't wait. The next game, and the years to come, because victory is going to be habitual.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
You know, Ty Richardson and I have as many shows completed as Chad Morris has games coached at the University of Arkansas. Coach's record is 1-1. Ty, I'm not sure what our record is. I'm sure our listeners have an opinion on whether we've stunk or succeeded these past 2 days. But I also think that they're willing to give us time to find a comfort zone. And yeah, we'll find that zone, I promise, if we haven't already. We'll cease putting drivers on I-40 asleep at some time over the next week or so, don't you think? Well, I think we have 2 wins, but we don't have every show marked down on our personal histories for all to see and debate. But even if we had 2 losses, I think you'd expect some understanding. I mean, this is a new thing for you and me. As much as you'd like to hit the ground running or maybe sprinting, it just doesn't happen that way very often. We've had a couple of weeks to get to know each other before the show, and that helped to get a sense of the things that you care about and how you speak and how you think. But there's no substitute for doing the show and learning each other live and on air. Now, that's the same for a new coach. Look, maybe you're a fan of the Chad Morris hiring and maybe you're not, but you can't look to the first 2 games or even the entire first season as a barometer of the hire. I'm of the school of thought that college football coaches have reasons for every decision they make. And I'm not into second-guessing professionals who spend entire days and nights figuring out personnel packages and drawing up schemes and trying to align 85 or so young men into some semblance of a confident, prepared, and fairly well-oiled machine. Especially when many of those young men aren't your young men and don't necessarily fit the game plan that you've been brought here to institute. Now, don't take this as an excuse for last Saturday's loss at Colorado State. The coaching staff knows that they share some of the responsibility in that meltdown. I mean, when you blow an 18-point second-half lead, there's plenty of blame to go around between the sidelines and on the sidelines. But that doesn't mean the loss is indicative of what Chad Morris will be like as the head coach for Arkansas football. It feels more like a starting point. This is where you are right now. It's the worst loss by any SEC team in this season's first 2 weeks. Deal with it. Learn from it. Move on from it. And build from there. You know, this team still has remnants of the mindset left over from the past 2 seasons, or even for most of Brett Bielema's tenure. Something that I can't quite put my finger on happens in the minds of the players. They play to not lose rather than to win. I've seen this on a lot of teams. Fear sets in when they're so close to victory that they can almost see the triple zeros on the clock or that final out squeezed. They're on their heels rather than on their toes, desperately hoping to win instead of knowing that they will. You know that feeling because as a fan of Arkansas sports, maybe you've always felt that way. The mindset must be changed, and Morris and his assistants have spoken much about that in the past 2 days. Senior defensive back Santos Ramirez knows that mindset all too well, and he thought that it crept into his team's mindset in Fort Collins.
If it did, you know, all I can say is at the end, we have to make sure that we got to stay locked in. It did shock us because, it reminded us, but we can't have a type of mentality, you know, regardless of what, we got to make sure that we keep our foot on people's necks when they down, man, and, you know, that's the name of the game, you know, regardless of what, man, the game is never won. Obviously, we showed that, you know, leading all the way up to the fourth quarter, they made a comeback, man, so, you know, we got to keep our foot on their neck, man, and we can't sit here and think that the game's ever over, especially on college football in D1.
That's right. You got to find a way to keep the foots on the necks. But until Chad Morris has his recruits, athletes made up for his up-tempo offense in the program, you can't make blanket statements about him. Yeah, put me squarely in the be patient camp. Sure, I felt that way when Brett Bielema's first team stumbled through that 0-8 conference season. He didn't have the personnel to run the style he wanted. And, of course, we all know that style never fully materialized or worked at Arkansas. But that doesn't mean being patient that first year was a mistake. As sports fans, we hate to be told to be patient. It's like I said on Monday about that complicated relationship status we all have with Arkansas football right now. You and I know stomping your feet and screaming until you are hoarse because the Hogs lost a game they should have won doesn't really mean anything. It's just venting. We're all frustrated, but patience and hope are two things that go hand in hand. And yeah, it might be difficult to hold on to hope in what looks like an extremely challenging season, but sometimes hope is all you have, and it helps to cling to it and be patient. Ty, I'm going to be patient. What's your feeling?
Well, I'm going to be patient, but I can understand why Razorback fans have not been, because you can't just look at what happened this year under Chad Morris. They've been clamoring for wins since the 2012 season, since the disaster happened with John L. Smith, and you have the following year when Brett Bielema doesn't win a conference game, goes 0-8 in that season. And then there's countless other times since 2012 where they've blown games. And it'd be one thing if Arkansas couldn't compete in these. It'd be one thing if they were a Vanderbilt, where they have not been good in decades upon decades. But it was just a short couple years back in 2011 where this team was in a BCS, or excuse me, they were in a BCS game in 2010, and they only had two losses in 2011. So the fact that fans have seen this team compete, not necessarily at the highest level like an Alabama, but be oh so close to the mountaintop, makes them realize, hey, we don't necessarily need to be SEC West contenders year after year, but there should be a little more expectation than we've had of late. They've just blown so many games, and Arkansas fans have just suffered through so much turmoil as of late. So it's one of those things where you just have to look at and say, Arkansas not only can compete in these games like we've seen, they can win these games. It just hasn't been that way as of late.
You feel like everybody was willing to be patient the first tough year with Bobby Petrino as the head coach. And by the end of that season, you saw reasons to have optimism. A little bit different that one season under John L. Smith. And I did feel like fans were willing to be patient the first year of Brett Bielema. But now, here it is. It's 5 years later, and it feels like the same story.
Yeah.
So while it makes perfect sense, I think, in most people's minds, to have that patience, they don't want to hear the same thing from just 5 years ago. It is the same discussion that we had 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's the same rhetoric that they're not only hearing from the athletic department, the administration, alumni. It's just they don't want to hear that consistent thought that, hey, Arkansas, we're close. We're getting there. Go back to 2014 at the end of Brett Bielema's second year. Arkansas dominates LSU, Ole Miss, loses a close game to Missouri, which people can argue that if Brandon Allen's healthy for that game, they win that game. And then they go on to the Texas Bowl and dominate the Longhorns. At that point, I would venture to say that Arkansas fans, maybe not 100% fully invested, but it was upwards of probably 90% were saying, okay, Brett Bielema was the real deal, let's go. And then transition to the following year in 2015. You have a solid season. You finish 8-5. Losses to Toledo, Texas Tech, and there were just moments during that season, including the Mississippi State loss, that you just looked at the team and you're like, I thought you guys were above this. I mean, it's year three. I know that there's growing pains in football seasons, even late in tenures with coaches, but they should have been above it at that point. And then they took a step back in 2016. And then 2017 took a major step back, and we all know what happened to Brett Bielema. So it's just about progression with Chad Morris. I've heard this alliteration several times. If Chad Morris succeeds here, no one's going to care that he lost to Colorado State in his first year. Because guess what? Nick Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe in 2007, his first year at home. He didn't lose at him on the road, lost him at home, Phil. So,
which is really difficult to even wrap your mind around.
How many Alabama fans could you? I don't even know if Alabama fans today like remember that. Like, if I ask someone my age today, it's like, hey, you remember when the Crimson Tide lost to Louisiana Monroe at home in 2007, Nick Saban's first year? They're like, no. Because winning magnifies every winning just takes all that stuff away. It takes the pain away.
Hey, you know what, guys? That this Nick Saban hire ain't going to work. It just ain't going to work. I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking bringing him on. Yeah, he'll be back in the NFL.
There's people freaking out in 2010. Alabama fans freaking out in 2010 when he had arguably his worst year there besides 2007. Saying, oh, I don't know about Nick. I don't know about it. That's not what it wasn't warranted or validated at all, but you still had Alabama fans still questioning his leadership after what he had done to that point.
The first year with Bobby Petrino, there wasn't an embarrassing out of conference loss to a Group of Five school. There wasn't any of that really under Brett Bielema either. And I think that's one area where
until Toledo.
I'm forgetting about the Toledo loss. Maybe that's because I wanted to. But the loss to Colorado State feels like that's the sort of thing where even a patient fan will have a little bit of a will have a little caveat in the back of his or her mind, thinking, well, that's not supposed to happen. And like we said, there were bits of reasons for optimism as the first seasons went on with Brett Bielema. Even that 0-8 season in the SEC, they still, the last three games were right in it with teams that were better than them and more talented, but they were able to make them pretty tight. And you had some moral victories, so to speak, like we brought up the other day. Nobody likes a moral victory, but you also like to feel like you are at least trending from competitiveness against those teams towards beating them eventually. And you felt that after Brett's first season, that it was going to happen at some point. Finally did start to get rolling a little bit by the end of that second season, but they just couldn't keep it going for that time. And part of it is that mindset, like I brought up when we first opened the show today. You could feel losses starting to happen even when you had leads. That's what happened on Saturday. Do you worry about that this next Saturday against North Texas, a team that looks like they've got the sort of offense to come from behind, even come from behind big? So that's you would look at, and I think Arkansas is going to score some points. I think the Hogs will put some points up. Let's say they have a decent-looking lead at halftime. There isn't anybody in Reynolds Razorback Stadium that's going to feel confident about the ability to hold on to that lead.
I got our poll question today.
Already.
Heading into the fourth quarter, if you're an Arkansas fan, would you rather be up 14 points in that game or be down 7? And at first, you hear that question, you hear that response, you're like, up 14, easily. But then you think about it, you dissect it a little bit. I honestly think, especially after the performance Saturday night, that the Arkansas players specifically would rather be down 7 heading into the fourth quarter against North Texas. And you never want to be losing to a team, but the team's mindset, and a lot of it is still leftover baggage from Brett Bielema, I still think, for whatever reason, they would actually like to be down hitting, not a lot, but 7-10. I think they'd rather be down in the fourth quarter than be up.
At that point, you're not going to worry about taking your foot off the pedal or your foot's off of the necks of the opponent because you're worried about your own neck at that point. I'd love to see a blowout win just like anybody else. I'd love to see them go out there and put together a full four-quarter performance. But I am interested in seeing how they respond when the backs are up against the wall. And I think going into this game on Saturday, you didn't feel that way going into Colorado State, but you do now. Backs are up against the wall. It's necessary to be 2-1 going into the Auburn game. I hate the term must-win games. And it's silly to think of North Texas coming into Arkansas as that being a must-win game, but that's what it is. I mean, it's a North Texas team that hasn't beaten a Power 5 school since 2011. They've lost the last 8 games when they have gone to visit a Power 5 school. Good teams like Iowa and Florida and Tennessee and Texas, Georgia. North Texas is coming in here expecting to win. I don't know if you could say that some of the other places that they've gone to visit over the past few years. But when they look at specifically the tape from the second half against the Rams and know their strengths, this is going to be a mean green team that comes in expecting to win. Man, it's going to be important for Arkansas fans to show up and give this team a real home field advantage. Because North Texas is coming in expecting a pretty crazy atmosphere. I wonder how many people feel like making it a crazy atmosphere on Saturday, where there'll be a lot of no-shows, more so than there would have been unless you would have beaten Colorado State. Man, it would actually kind of be a little embarrassing if it wasn't a great atmosphere for just the second home game of the season.
Ballpark and attendance. Because John asked me this the other day, and I initially said 60. And he was like, whoa, you think there's going to be 60? And then I rethought about it, and I was like, yeah, I don't know if there's going to be 60.
Now you're talking about the actual people that are going to show up, not the ticket sold thing.
Air quotes, ticket sold.
It'll be sold out. Yeah. It'll be sold out with the ticket sold, that's for sure. I mean, it looks like the weather's supposed to be good on Saturday. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a midday game, so there's plenty of time to lube up and have some fun at the tailgate and know that you're not spending, you know, the entire night of the football stadium. You can make it just a day thing. That's one of those days you want to go to the game, but you want to show up knowing that your team's going to win against North Texas. And that's one of the reasons why you may end up with a smaller crowd than you would like, than you would have expected if you would beat Colorado State. People show up when they expect a win, or if the opponent is something you want to watch. That's why the Alabama game is going to be jam-packed.
You think it's the most packed game of the season? Even though it's, you know, it's funny, it might be the most jam-packed game of the season, but it might be the one that Arkansas is least likely to win this season. I would venture to say that it's that or at Auburn. I give them no chance, not a better chance, not a slim chance. They are not going down to Auburn next week and winning that football game. Alabama, I don't think there's any chance either. But it's probably going to be the most packed, right?
Yeah, I think it'll be a sellout. I think that there'll actually be people in the seats for a sellout when Alabama comes in. And I mean, first school I went to was Indiana University, not the best football school in the country.
Heck of a basketball program.
One of the worst, actually. But my first year there is 1994. They're the dregs of the Big Ten. Never sold out. But I'll tell you what, when Eddie George and Ohio State came into Bloomington, that place was packed. When Kerry Collins and Penn State and Kajana Carter showed up, that place was packed. Football fans love to see excellence. Sports fans do love to see excellence. I think they'll come to see what happens when Alabama visits Fayetteville. I don't know if they're going to stick around after halftime, but they'll see what happens for those first two quarters and then maybe decide from there.
You got to see some legends in your college heyday. Goodness gracious.
That's
Eddie
right.
George.
And none of them played for Indiana. Not a one of them.
What was the basketball program like when you were in school? Because, I'm thinking early 80s, Isaiah Thomas, other parts.
I'm dating myself as a 41-year-old. So this was 1994. This was not quite before. This wasn't quite the time that the Bob Knight imploded.
Okay.
He hadn't choked Neil Reed yet because Neil Reed was a freshman on my first team there as a freshman too.
So he was close to.
He was, well, if he did choke him, it didn't get on video and nobody reported it. But I do remember watching him almost headbutt his son, Pat, who was a bench player for that team. Those Indiana teams were disappointing. They were expected to go to the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. Never got out of the first round of the NCAA tournament. And it was kind of the beginning of the end for Bob Knight, honestly. The basketball team was fun to watch. It was a great atmosphere. The football team was not. It was not a great atmosphere. Only thing you did at football games was see if you could pick out where John Mellencamp was sitting. And that was about it.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast. Follow the guys on Twitter at PhilElsonPXP and at Ty Sports Radio.
And it's Joe Adams with a hurdle. Great speed. Adams down the sideline. He's gone. 92 yards for a touchdown.
how important is it for Arkansas to have a recruiting stake in Texas?
Well, it's a conversation we've had since the end of the Quinn Grovey, Barry Foster, Lou Holtz era, almost. I'm thinking back to 89 when they played in the Cotton Bowl, but really they have not been significant, certainly since 92 when the SEC went east and west and Arkansas came. It really hasn't been much of a foothold in there, and either what they're getting hasn't been significant enough or they're not properly evaluating through the years, but it's been a big missing element for sure. And couple that with, now think about this, when they joined the league, the East was stronger. That was Tennessee and Florida. Tennessee and Florida's game back then was kind of like, oh boy, what would be a good example? Whatever the top, you know, Alabama and Auburn right now, maybe not with history there, but it was that big. It had division and national championship implications. Obviously, it does make more. Arkansas now finds himself in the toughest division in football. So there's a lot of issues with being at Arkansas, but those are a couple.
Bill, Arkansas lost to Colorado State on Saturday night. I don't know if you got a chance to watch the game. You're probably watching the Clemson Texas A&M. When you heard that score, what was your initial reaction?
I'm not shocked. I mean, it's year one. You're changing philosophy, and that's a tough transition. And you're changing philosophy in Vietnam with talent. That's probably, if we're ranking the 14 teams, I mean, Arkansas is probably in the 10 through 14 area in players. I mean, they're way at the bottom. And that's just where we're at. So I think Arkansas right now in this build-out, when people look at them, probably shouldn't be surprised. It's going to take, and I know this sounds, using the phrase nowadays it's going to take time, it's actually turned into a tired analogy, but it's true. I'm going to have to come up with a different way to say it, but patience is going to have to be a virtue here, because A, you're behind big time in talent, and B, you're playing with Alabama, Auburn, this is the best looking Mississippi State team I've seen, including the 2014 team. Texas A&M has more resources than anybody in America. Forbes just called A&M by numbers the number one school in America when it comes to money. I mean, that's a tough neighborhood to reside in, and Chad Morris is going to have to build out with all of that surrounding.
Bill, you hit on a theme that I opened the show with, and it's the idea of how difficult it must be for this fan base at Arkansas to hold that patience, because it was just 5 years ago in Brett Bielema's first season that we were having the exact same conversation. It wasn't about losing to a group of five team on the road or a late meltdown against a team like Colorado State, but it was the same conversation. This is a new head coach. He's got a different system. He doesn't have his players inside that system that he needs just yet. The talent isn't quite there. We know how that worked out. What makes this any different from 5 years ago?
Well, that's why you have a lot of doubters outside of the Arkansas family. Most everybody outside of the Arkansas family looks inward and says, I'm going to have to see this. I appreciate your enthusiasm, but you're going to have to prove it to me. Words mean nothing. And I'm a big Chad Morris guy. I'm back to high school and Tulsa and Clemson and SMU. I'm a believer in him, but he's got his hands on a tough gig. Doesn't mean he can't get something done, but it's a very difficult gig. And I don't have a good answer for you when you say, how is this going to be different? Obviously, the philosophy is going to be different. They're going to play with wide receivers. They're going to throw the ball. They're going to be multiple, more so than Brett Bielema. That gives you a chance. But you're also, again, doing this inside of a division that plays wicked, nasty defense, probably better than any other division in football. That's, you know, this. Everywhere you go, there's a 50-foot brick wall reinforced with steel. That's what it's like. And I'll be watching. I'll be enjoying it. But it's tough, build out the tough gig. It's become a very difficult job.
Maybe the most difficult job in the SEC, I think, when you're looking at the new coaches at each of the programs.
Right.
I think, I mean, you know, you can see even though Florida doesn't look very good right now, there's that talent base that Dan Mullen can recruit from and a history of success. Jimbo, obviously, with A&M, and you mentioned, we talked about the Forbes thing in the last segment. They've got everything they need. You know, Pruitt at Tennessee, they're on that list, too, and a history of success. Moorhead at Mississippi State, that's another thing I want to ask about later because they look terrific. But it seems to me that with the challenges that you're already presented at Arkansas, that maybe it's the toughest place to be a first-year head coach right now.
Well, let me also say this. Let's just combine and go east-west. It's an entire league. This is the best-looking Georgia team I've seen last year, this year, since 1980. My freshman year was Georgia's national championship season. I saw Herschel Walker's first carry.
You're dating yourself, Bill.
I know. I watched all this. I'm proud of it. And so I know what it looked like. I was there. And I know what it needs to look like. And Georgia is, let me tell you something. Georgia is Alabama's DNA twin in Athens, Georgia. That's what they are right now. They match up with Alabama player for player, literally, maybe better in some positions. That's how, and they are way more, and both of them are having top two classes in America, what have you, but they're geographically advantaged where Alabama's not. Now, Alabama's a good place. Georgia is an incredible place, location-wise. So, again, I expand our conversation to say the problem doesn't just end in the West. It ends with your neighbors in the East. Now, the East hadn't been as good as the West, but Georgia, right now, can trot a roster out with any team in America and say, okay, I got my guy. I'm good with him. You bring your guy out here. We'll see how it goes. That's how good Georgia is right now.
Bill, looking at another talented team, LSU, year after year it seems like they have some of the most talent in college football, but they haven't had a quarterback in I don't know how long. Are you a believer in the Tigers this year? They got a big game on Saturday in Jordan Hare.
Not as it pertains to some sort of championship. Can they be better than we thought? Because some are predicting a train wreck. And I thought this thing might unravel. I thought if they lose the Miami game, it could really unravel, which they dominated the game. So I'm pleasantly surprised there. I think where we're going here, though, is big picture, what does this mean? And I think the Auburn game is going to tell us what we need to know. They win that game, and then I've got to open up my eyes to areas, guys, where I didn't think I was going to have to go there. I'm still not a believer there. Joe Burrow obviously has solidified that team. His numbers aren't great. But guys, I'm telling you, you probably have seen what I've seen through the years. When LSU breaks a huddle without somebody tripping on offense, I think that's a success. That's how out of order they've been and how poorly coached they've been on offense. I'm going back Les Miles, et cetera. I see stability there offensively because they've always been pretty good defensively, if oftentimes great defensively. I see stability there offensively that was unexpected. And, you know, you run off a coordinator that you didn't even give a half year to implement a system to. He's now at Maryland as the head coach. You take a guy that's been on that staff and played there. Literally, Steve Ensminger, guys, he played there in the 70s. Been passed over 100 times. Now you give him the gig, and it's going to be the answer? It looks okay right now. And again, they've got the whole West to negotiate. But right now, I am really surprised.
I want to ask you about Mississippi State because they just look like a physical specimen of a team. And maybe they get the passing game figured out. Maybe right. Fitzgerald needs a little bit more time to get back in the rhythm, but when you've got him running, when you've got Kylan Hill running, when you're grounding up about 300 yards on the road at Kansas State, that Joe Moorhead right now, I mean, maybe that's a great situation for him, but this is a great offensive mind. They're physical. They look like they will just beat the snot out of a lot of teams that they take the field against. What do you think about Mississippi State's chances? Maybe not to win the West, but to maybe finish right behind Alabama if it comes to that.
They're that good. They are. I don't think they're – and they got to go to Tuscaloosa. It would be hard for me to say they win that game, but they were as physical as anybody I saw. Kylan Hill looked as good at running back as any running back I've seen. Now, we've seen 2 weeks, so I'm not trying to go too far, but loved his game. He beat out a returning 1,000-yard starter. They're not real good at wide receiver. They're not bad. Their defense is wicked. with talent. I mean, decapitate you type talent. Physical players that are tough. And I'm with you, man. I think what we're trying to figure out is what's the ceiling here? And frankly, I'm a Dan Mullen fan of some sort, but they might have upgraded at coach here with Joe Moorhead. I mean, Joe Moorhead came in. Got to remember, 2 years ago, Penn State opened the season. They lost to a bad – well, Pitt wasn't bad, but they were average. They got killed by Michigan by like 40. Joe Moorhead's the new coordinator there. They ended up winning the Big Ten, and they ended up in the Rose Bowl. That's what kind of turnaround they had. And they had just lost their defensive coordinator, Coach Shute, who now is at Mississippi State, ironically, to Tennessee for all the money Tennessee was going to pay him at the time. And people were talking about how Penn State were losing coordinators and it's really going downhill and James Franklin's finally going to get fired. And he'd only been there a couple of years. And Joe Moorhead, who's at a small school, comes in there. Nobody really knows him from down here, and he does a remarkable job. He may be – that may be an even better hire, I guess, is my long-winded, bloviating point, a better hire than any of us even thought it was.
What's happened in Florida? I will close on that. Florida State doesn't look like I expect Florida State. They look silly with that backpack. The Gators losing to Kentucky, Miami. I mean, Central Florida was the best team in that state last year. Might even be the same case this season.
Correct. I'll give you a quick cliff notes there on the way out the door. Florida State is an absolute mess, and it's a way bigger mess than you know it is. There's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, and it's not good. They're very disorganized. They're changing systems. You've got malcontent. You've got discontent on the roster. You've got a lot of non-believers. You got a fan base that is in an absolute panic mode right now because they see it. They got to go to Syracuse, playing the Carrier Dome against Derek Dungy, and an offense that is very revved up. If they win the game, it's obviously not a surprise. They could get boat racing this thing. Florida is worse off at talent than we thought. Florida has been broken offensively, except the Driscoll 2013 season. They've been broken offensively since the end of 09. We're almost done 10 years. So that's not a surprise. Mullen's got to dig out of that, and that's not his fault yet. Where they've always been able to rest and say, okay, we're okay here because they play good defense. They don't have that anymore. So it's bad on both sides of the ball right now. Defensive personnel is not what it is all these years where it was only the defense playing. They had that forever. They don't even have that now. So they've got a huge talent problem there. And that's going to – I wouldn't be surprised to see Tennessee beat them in 2 weeks, which I never would have said that this past summer. And then Miami, you know what? Miami's a streaky team. They won their first 10. Then they lost to a bad Pitt team. Then they got destroyed by Clemson. Then they got beat in their bowl game at Wisconsin. And then they lose, of course, the opener in a dominating way to LSU. They just beat a tomato can last Saturday at home. I think they've run out of momentum. That quarterback is not very good. They do not have a backup for the quarterback either. The freshman that they redshirted last year has been in a little bit of trouble. Mark Richt is an energy vampire. That's what we call it. I don't know if Ty told you that, but his name is the energy vampire on the show because that's what he is. And he just sucks the life out of a team. And I think they peaked last year. Let's see if history proves me right. I think they peaked last year in the Notre Dame. They destroyed Notre Dame. And if you think about it, guys, they have not been close to that type of team since.
Well, you certainly didn't suck the life out of this show, Bill. You added some life to it. Thanks so much. Looking forward to having you on Wednesdays for the rest of the show.
All right, boys. Thank you, guys.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
Trying to extend the play.
The halfway point of the week, if you're talking about our show, Ty Richardson.
We are.
It's halftime of halftime for the week. And it's also time, because we're going to have a special segment every single day on this show, it's time to change my mind.
I change my mind.
Hi, Joey.
Hey, how you doing?
He won't sell anybody out to buy his future.
How can you be so obtuse?
What did you call me?
Obtuse. Is it deliberate?
Son, you're forgetting yourself.
Change my mind.
The idea here is to have an opinion which might not make very much sense to somebody else. You're going to do your absolute best to convince. I'm going to do my best to convince Ty of why I feel how I feel. And he might not feel that way. In fact, he's probably, I'm going to guarantee he doesn't feel that way. So, Ty, this is, you know, you and I are still getting to know each other here. Here's a little window into my personality and my mind and my sense of humor and maybe even my music sense.
Speaking of that, I mean, you did hear what I played, what this is, right?
Of course, this is Wiz.
I just want to make Pittsburgh.
This is hometown stuff for me.
Yeah.
Gets me all excited. Gets me thinking about the black and the gold, although this is black and yellow. Hoping that Ben Roethlisberger's elbow injury doesn't keep him out all that long. And that Le'Veon Bell does get back at some point. Although I don't even know if that's going to happen.
I got James Conner, so I'm good either way.
But this is my favorite recording artist. Oh, I don't have it on here. It's not on there. Anyway, Weird Al Yankovic. Weird Al Yankovic is the best recording artist in the United States. I'd load it in Eat It, which I could sing to you, but I'm not going to sing to you. I gave you some song lyrics a few days ago from Whitney Houston. I won't sing Weird Al to you. But I do think Weird Al is by far the greatest recording artist alive. He's been at it since the late 1970s. His career longer than anybody that he's lampooned. Just got his star on the Walk of Fame outside Grumman's Chinese Theater in Los Angeles. And he is respected worldwide by those recording artists that he occasionally lampoons. Do you believe me? Do you think Weird Al is the greatest recording artist alive?
No. You're going to have to change my mind on this. Absolutely. You're going to have to put some... Give me some facts. Give me some statistics.
So you know
back this up.
His Mandatory Fun album, which came out about 4 years ago, was his first ever... gold album, and that comes about 25 years into his tenure as a recording artist. So he's got lasting power. He's good with the Generation Xers like me. He's good with the millennials like you. We've all bought, well, no, nobody buys stuff anymore. We've all listened to it. We've all laughed. And he's done it with different looks too. He doesn't have the mustache anymore, nor the glasses. He's got the long crimped hair. Yes, he is the greatest recording artist alive. I don't know if I changed your mind on that, but you'll never change my mind that he is not. Although I know there are plenty of music fans out there that are thinking, what? What are you talking about here? Well, I mean, I've probably seen Weird Al Yankovic live more often than anybody else, which also tells you I haven't been to many concerts in the last 20 years doing live sports. That usually takes precedence.
My dad just texted me and said, Weird Al, ? Really?
Oh, I got plenty of texts just like that already. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like I told you, it's a window into my mind. What are you going to need to change my mind about?
All right. So I think that I'll be able to say this, and you will disagree with me on this. I don't think Tua is going to win the Heisman this year, even though Alabama's going to win a national championship and that he's going to have unbelievable stats.
But he's the most talented player in the country.
I'm not going to argue that. But if you look at what's going to happen with Alabama, they do play a decent schedule, but it's not as tough as a Trace McSorley, maybe a Bryce Love. Jared Stidham's got a tougher schedule if he's able to beat Alabama. But if you look at what is going on for him in his season in 2018, right now he's 3-1 on Westgate to win the Heisman. But you have to think about, I don't think Jalen Hurts is going to continuously play and come in for him and spot play like he has been. He has not passed for over 500 yards yet this season in two games. And you're like, oh, well, he's been pretty accurate. He's been pretty good. I'm not going to argue his talent. I'm just telling you, between splitting carries with Najee Harris, Jacobs, just the talent they have, Alabama doesn't hurt you just by one full switch of the sword. It's death by a thousand cuts. And so what's going to happen is Nick Saban, Brian Dabble, the offensive coordinator, and Danny Enos, the quarterback coach, they're going to attack defenses and opponents in so many different ways. And they're going to use Tua's strengths, but he's not going to have the gregarious stats that I think people expect him to have. And he might be the best player in college football, I don't know if I can definitively say that because I think there's a couple other guys that are like Bryce Love, Trace McSorley, Jarrett Stidham. I mean, there's some guys out there this year that are good. I just think looking at what is going to happen with him overall with statistics, Heisman is most of the time it's a stats parade. It's like, oh my gosh, this guy did this. Remember when Tebow in 2007, the reason he beat out Darren McFadden is because he had so many touchdowns running and passing. And a couple other reasons that we don't have to get into. But he's just not going to have the stats. Even though he's going to have the wins, he's not going to have the stats to stack him up against the other guys. Even though I think he might deserve it.
But
change my mind.
But Jalen's not even going to... Jalen Hurts isn't even going to... He's not even going to play more than four games.
That's probably right. That's what the reports.
He's going to redshirt. Mm-hmm. He's going to play his four games too. We'll take every snap after that.
That's not true. Mac Jones will come in. The other thing is, you're not calculating, Alabama is going to mercy rule some teams. Just dominate. So Tua's going to get pulled in maybe beginning of the second half. So all that time he's not playing, that's time he's not getting to showcase his full armoire. He's not able to showcase his full arsenal. And that's just going to hurt his high, not him and not Alabama, but that's going to hurt him in his Heisman campaign. So change my mind, Phil.
I still think, you heard me the other day. I mean, I think Kyler Murray, for me, is going to end up being a Heisman winner. He's going to have the passing stats and probably the running stats, and they're going to have to lean on him more heavily with their starting running back out for the rest of the season. So I don't know if I'll change your mind, but I think... My mind was already changed before we started the segment. So I think you win right there.
Yeah. So.
All right. So I've got this one here. And I think Arkansas's defense is going to step up. And I think they're going to have a good game against North Texas on Saturday. But what does that mean? What does that mean to have a good game against the North Texas defense? They're averaging 52 points a game. Better not allow 50 points to North Texas. A better day would be keeping them in the, what, low 30s? Is that doable for a team that just got passed on so badly by Colorado State, now facing a better passing offense? But I think you're going to get a better pass rush. I think there are players that are healthy now, that are coming back to play some defense for you.
Ernie Ramsey.
Dre Greenlaw. I think that those two players, getting Ramsey back is huge. I think there's going to be a pass rush this weekend. And I think that they might get to Mason Fine a couple, three times. And I think they might make it difficult for him to be steady inside the pocket. And I think the coverage will be a little bit better. Because it can't be worse than what we saw on Saturday. I think Arkansas is going to have a pretty decent defensive performance against North Texas on Saturday. Change my mind.
You did not change my mind. I kind of agree with you on the first one, because I like Weird Al in a sense, but I don't think it's a great... This one is not even close. Here's why. You just mentioned Mason Fine. He's torched team so far this season. What have you seen from the Arkansas defense that gives you confidence? Okay.
But who has he torched? Incarnate Word.
SMU. Powerful SMU. I just think his abilities, a shifty, he's not the straight line Kyler Murray fast, but he's shifty, quick passes. They're not going to have time. You mentioned the pass rush. I just don't think they're going to have time to get to him, even with an upgraded pass rush, because they get the ball out so quick. It's similar to Arkansas. Like, Arkansas hasn't had any sacks given up against them this season, because for the most part, Cole Kelly and Ty Storer are chucking and ducking. They're getting the ball out quick. So I just think in that similar... And I think I agree with you in the sense that they might not score 50, but I would say it's going to be more in the 40 range.
Do you think it'll be a better defensive performance? I think they'll play a lot better than they did against Colorado State. I still think that they have a chance to hold them into the 30s.
I think, okay, so the line's 70 right now. I think it's over between the two teams. I think North Texas goes over 35. I'd be very surprised if Arkansas held them under 35 offensive points. But I think
that pass rush is going to be better. I think the team's embarrassed from what happened on Saturday. I think they're going to have that stuck in the back of their mind. I think they're going to come in focused. I think they're going to come in more confident because of healthier players, and I think they end up with a better defensive performance.
All right, so John and Tommy and I argued about this a little bit. This was a couple days ago. They were talking about great tailgating games. They were talking about cards. They mentioned beer pong and some other things, and What I said was there is no better game than Bago, Cornhole, or Bags, whatever you want to call it. What do you call it? Well, like, being from Pittsburgh, what do you call that?
Before I moved to Arkansas, it was Bago.
Okay.
But, I mean, how could I not call it Cornhole? It's just too much fun to say.
You changed the lingo a little
bit? Way too much fun to say.
That is the best tailgating game out there, period, if you have room for it. Now, Tommy and John did bring up a good point. Sometimes you don't. There's not the necessarily room allotted at your tailgating spot that you have the proper space to play it. But there's these new games. There's always been horseshoes. There's that new, I can't think of what it's called, but you throw these like balls and then they stick like on goalpost. I can't think of what the game's called. But for me, it's a classic. Bago, Bags, Cornhole, whatever you want to call it. That is the best tailgating game out there. Changed my mind, Phil Elson.
You know, the tailgate that I'm going to go to is the tailgate that finds a way to get a real dartboard onto the tailgate. Because I want to play darts. I don't want to play cornhole. I want darts. I know cornhole is kind of like darts-ish, just with bags and a hole, not with sharp objects and corkboard. You get me some darts and some meat and some beverages and a lot of people around us, you could come up with some really fun, entertaining, and semi-dangerous games. And we all know that cornhole is not dangerous because those things are soft. I want to play darts, not cornhole.
I've never seen darts at a tailgate, Phil.
Guess you're never going to see me at your tailgate.
Is that a Steelers thing? Or?
No, it's just a me thing. It's just what I'm looking for. I've never seen it.
Oh, you've never seen it. Okay.
Somebody's got to do it. Someone will be the first. Somebody will be the first to get darts at a real tailgate. I don't know what it takes because there are no walls at tailgates. You're outside. So you're going to have somebody that loses a bet hold the dartboard out there. And at that point, you're really talking danger. Now you're really talking. I'm not talking about one of those dartboards that has the soft tips and the holes in the dartboard that it sticks in. I'm talking about the real thing. The sharp points and the dartboard that takes the essentially the sharp point inside of it. You know, and these sharp points do go inside skin if you need to. This is a window into my mind too, Ty. Sometimes you got to take about one out of every three things I say and realize that I don't mean it. I don't want people to get hurt, but I do want to be entertained.
Fair enough. All right, what's your last one?
Well, I mean, you know I'm a baseball guy and have been for a long time. Kevin Costner had made a trio of baseball movies. One of them, to me, it's amongst this trio of movies that he made for baseball, but it's not on the list necessarily or at the same level of the other two. And I'm talking Field of Dreams, Bull Durham, and For Love of the Game. Bull Durham is by far the best of the Kevin Costner baseball movies. And it's for reasons like incredible lines. Incredible
lines. Sucker teed off on that like he knew I was going to throw a fastball.
He did know.
How?
I told him.
See, I'm not even that big of a baseball fan, but I love that movie. It's so good. And I like Field of Dreams. I might be agreeing with you on this, honestly.
Field of Dreams is a little fantastical. It's a little cosmic. It's an emotional journey. It's a father-son thing. You need tissues next to you near the end of the movie when you're watching it. And it's also the kind of movie that it doesn't quite hold today. It's still a great movie. For Love of the Game, look, that's like two different movies that needed to be separated. And I would love to fast forward through every piece of the love story involving Kelly Preston in For Love of the Game. And by the way, for me to not be interested in a love story involving Kelly Preston is shocking. Huge Kelly Preston fan. Made a big impact on me in my youth.
I bet. So are you arguing that Bull Durham is the best baseball movie of all time or just the best Kevin Costner one?
Well, it is the best baseball movie of all time, well, and I think it's the best movie of all time.
Here's where we might get into some debate. I'm gonna age. You know how you age yourself when you're older. I'm gonna age myself a little bit since I'm a little younger.
Go ahead and age yourself.
I really grew up and I love The Rookie with Dennis Quaid. I love that movie, and that's a little I think 2003. I liked Rookie of the Year, but I don't know if that's in the same category. But the Rookie to me, anytime that comes on, it's one of those movies where I'm glued to it, and I watch it every single time, no matter what I'm doing. If I'm just flicking through the channels, so I think, and Bill Durham, it's a different sense. Like Major League and Bill Durham are like same kind of baseball movie, but the Rookie to me has an effect that I don't know that Bill Durham does.
Well, there's a lot of love in that movie as well, you know, with his family and Jim Morris, mm-hmm. and the age and being a coach and all that. Absolutely. It's Disney, though, too. It's Disney.
It's Disneyed up, for sure. It's like Miracle.
I can't put Disney on the list of greatest baseball movies. I just can't. Bull Durham is as accurate to the life of what minor league baseball players experience, even today, to a point. It is as accurate as any other example of what it is like to be a professional athlete on a non-glamorous stage. I love the idea of the non-glamour part of it, the unglamorous part, because that's what minor league baseball is like. And to have the characters like Nuke Lelouch. Hey, is somebody going to go to bed with somebody or what? And some of the other phrases that I can't even say on the air. You could put me down at Boldy. Your shower shoes have fungus on them. Did Dwight Gooden leave his socks on? Hey, these are just some of the lines. It's a fabulous movie. It does involve love. It does involve baseball. And it involves the Church of Baseball, which I strictly adhere to.
All right. So I edited mine a little bit. I'm a huge rom-com movie fan, and I think the best rom-com movie of all time is 10 Things I Hate About You.
How you doing?
Sweating like a pig, actually, and yourself?
Now, there's a way to get a guy's attention, huh?
Please tell me you've seen that.
I haven't, sorry.
You
haven't,
so
no.
We can't really argue on this.
I avoid some of these rom-coms.
So what rom-coms do you like?
Oh, let's see here.
Because technically, Bull Durham's one, but that's a sports movie.
It's a sports movie. Yeah. That's not really a rom-com.
What about this? Is Jerry Maguire a rom-com? Or is that a sports movie? I get in heated debates about this.
That's a sports movie.
You do consider it a sports movie?
I do think that's a sports
movie. Even though it's heavily predicated on a romantic interest?
Oh, but most sports movies end up having a romantic interest in it anyway.
All right, so rom-com.
I was a fan of Serendipity.
I actually watched that last night.
You watched this movie last night?
Yes.
You are really into rom-coms.
I try to watch at least one a week. So it's weird because like I'm opposite of the spectrum. I'm like macho sports guy that like can tell you anything. I can name you every NBA champion since 1980, and then I can name you every good rom-com since 1990.
I mean, I like a lot of John Cusack movies anyway. So I mean, that to me, I go with Serendipity. I mean, you could even say anything is a little bit of a drama rom-com.
That's on the list. I haven't seen that one yet.
Gross Point Blank. These are some of my favorites.
These are going over my head, so maybe I need to do a little homework.
So why is the 10 Things I Hate About You? Why is that?
Well, it's got Heath
list?
Ledger. It's got Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and then R.I.P. Heath Ledger, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. This is like young Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and it's got a few other actors and actresses. One of the actresses is escaping me. She was kind of big when I was growing up. But it's such a well put together movie. It's not at all how my high school experience was, and that's why it made it so great, because it's just like the teachers are yelling at the kids and making fun of the kids and stuff like that. It's just so different, and I think that's why it stood out to me so much.
Did you get made fun of a lot in high school?
I got messed with a little
by
bit.
By girls?
Oh, yeah. So I don't think I knew how to talk to a girl until I was a junior in college. Dead serious.
You do now?
More or less.
I got lessons for you after the show if you need it.
Sweet.
What happens when you're 41 and divorced? Hey, stuff happens, right?
Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.